Ramsey TV.
Broadcasting from the edge of the bottom of the Floridan Peninsula, this is Martin Sunder. Welcome to Monday edition of MZTV. Hey, if it was too late to sign up to go to the Phoenix, Arizona conference on May 5th, 6th, and 7th, I would tell you. I've never held back telling you disquieting things. But great news is you can still sign up to the conference. In fact, you don't even have to sign up. You can just show up. But it'd be nice to send Dave Ward an email and let him know that you're coming. Dave Ward is the organizer of the Phoenix, Arizona conference. The conference is at the Best Western Plus Executive Residency Hotel. Woo, this is big time. And there is a conference discount. It's only good till April 28th. You have until April 28th. You can save $70 a night because Dave has reserved via the generosity of the hotel staff a block of rooms. And get yours now. Get yours now. It's going to be a nice place. The conference is going to be there. You can email Dave Ward at dave.ward.a@hotmail.com. dave.ward.a@hotmail.com. Tell him you're coming. He'd love to hear you. He says he's got 20 people so far that have contacted him. That's great news. It doesn't mean that's all that are going to attend, but hey, if it was only 20 people, that would be fantastic. I'll make the flight for 10 people. Yes, but if there were only 5, would you make the flight? Yes, for 5, I would make the flight. But Martin, what if there was but one person attending the conference? Would you make the flight? For one person, yes, I would make the flight to come herald the gospel of the grace of God in Phoenix, Arizona. So I would love to see you there. Just show up at the Best Western Plus Executive Residency Hotel. Just show up there on May 5th, that's a Friday, at 6 p.m. It's a meet and greet. Just, if you can't find the room, I don't know where it is as I speak to you, just go to the hotel clerk, say, I'm looking for the Zender Conference. And they'll show you the way. It's going to be informal, but I'm sure Dave will have some snacks, we'll have some drinks there. If it's up to me, we'll have a little whiskey. I'll take care of business, don't you worry about that. And the conference proper starts Saturday at 9 a.m. So right now, you don't need to schedule. That's all you need to know to get started. You need the dates, May 5th, 6th, and 7th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You need the starting times, Friday night, 6 p.m., if you can make it, Saturday, 9 a.m., okay? And you need the venue, and it's the Best Western Plus Executive Residency. Nice hotel. And Dave Ward is the guy you need to contact, dave.ward.a@hotmail.com. We'd love to see you there. I got to thank Denise Snyder. People have been sending me care packages, and God bless everyone who does so. And Denise was the one who sent me the 2 giant, like 20-pound bags of M&Ms. Thanks, Denise. Got to run some extra miles for that. But I guess she felt a little guilty, and so she sent me like 5 packs of this protein pack. Look at this stuff. Power Up is called Power Up Premium Trail Mix. You got your peanuts in here, raisins, almonds, dried cherries. That's a treat. Cashews and pumpkin seeds. Very healthful mix. Thank you, Denise. And there was a big jug of peanuts as well. Thank you very much. And then, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Perry from Illinois. Chris, just want to tell you here publicly, I got your package. The chocolate did survive the hot Florida heat. That was clever of you to put a couple cooling items in there. I got it in time, believe me. And between the Power Up Protein Trail Mix and the chocolate you sent me, I'm going to really have to put in the workouts. But Chris, I really appreciated the beautiful letter that you sent me, and I will be responding via email as soon as I can. Thank you for your patience. Now, I appreciated all your comments, everybody, last week about the free will debate with me and Pastor Clay Kent back in 1997, 26 years ago. It seems hard to believe. And I told you that I was going to follow up with a teaching on the theory of the fly in the jar. And I think it's good timing for that because you see how the flesh and the spirit is in a struggle. Clay Kent's spirit wanted to say that God's in control. His spirit rebelled at the premise on that whiteboard that said man's will can operate independently of God. It clashed with his spirit. But that's exactly what his flesh believes. And so there's this, it's exactly what his flesh believes, but he's not honest enough. Wasn't honest enough to just say, look, I don't believe God controls everything. I don't believe that God does operate everything. There's some things he doesn't operate. There's some degree in which humans are free. He couldn't say it that nakedly. Didn't want to be pinned down to the premise. That's why he had it erased. Free will people, especially limited free will people, depend on being able to vacillate between two propositions that are mutually exclusive. That is the sovereignty of God and the freedom of the human. So I wrote a little humorous piece, surprise, surprise, in January of 2013. It's called The Fly in the Jar. I want to share that with you because it's a common theory. Dog on the leash, fly in the jar. Common theory that God has the big picture in place, but the little details he doesn't have to micromanage because it doesn't matter if humans have a little bit of freedom, God can still make it happen in the end. That is completely false. That is human philosophy. It is to be rejected. It is repulsive, and it's a slap in the face to the truth. And so I'm going to expose this teaching today with a little bit of humor. Have a hypothetical conversation with me and the guy who invented, or a representative of the man who invented the fly in the jar theory. But here's a news break. This goes along with what I started last week. The spirit and the flesh in humanity regularly oppose one another. Paul said that's exactly what it does. Your spirit tells you that you ought to be nice to the guy who just cut you off on the highway. You ought to be nice to him. That's the spirit. But your flesh wants to flip him the bird. And there's this constant battle between flesh and spirit. Now, this conflict is even worse when you take it off the highway. It really messes with people when they consider the doctrine of human free will versus the doctrine of the sovereignty of God. I should say the theory of human free will versus the truth of the sovereignty of God. Now, most people, I think, have some modicum of spirit somewhere deep inside of them. Clay Kent did. That believes God has to be in control. It's impossible for the God of the universe to not be in control of his universe. So they want to say it. I would call this believing in the sovereignty of God. You and I do that. That's good. But then the same human flesh in hundreds of millions of people, the same human flesh wants a piece of the pie. As we discussed last week, it wants some freedom. Okay, let's stick with Christians for the time being. When asked if God is sovereign, the average Christian will answer yes. See, that's the spirit talking. But you have to press him. When asked if humans have free wills, that same average Christian will also answer yes. That's the flesh. You see, spirit and flesh opposing one another. So the average Christian, and most of the human race really, suffers from a conflict of interest. Well, the Christian mainly, because at least the Christian, in that little bit of spirit that they might have, wants at least to say God is in control. The Christian's spirit is interested in God directing all of life's affairs. Yeah, sounds good. But his flesh wants some credit and some control. That's the ugly part. Just a little bit of control. Can we have it? That'd be fine. So most of these people, they talk a good game of sovereignty, but they sure as heck can't play it. So I know this is review, and a lot of you are going, oh, we've heard enough of this. Okay, I know. I'm going to get off this topic. It's a great topic, though. I'm going to move on. I'm going to get back to God's will and his intention. And I'm going to finish that little chapter from A.E. Knox's book. And then I'll move on. I got topics that you're going to really love. I got them all written down in my phone. Whenever I'm running or whatever, I'm at the grocery store, thoughts come to me all the time. And I jot them down in these make-for shows, and you're going to be really happy with what's coming up. So to be consistent and intelligent, one who claims to believe in free will would have to admit God does not control everything, right? Because, as we discussed last week, a free will is not controlled. As we discussed last week, a controlled will is not free, and a free will is not controlled. But how many bow to such honesty? No, it's double talk. How many can bring themselves to say, I would love to hear people say this. God is not quite sovereign. He's not quite in control of everything. That's why I would love to hear them say this. Nah, I've never been able to press anybody into saying, God, no, he's not really in control of everything. See, they have to say both things. Or I'd love to hear him say, no, God does not operate all things in accord with the counsel of his own will. But that's what Ephesians 1:11 says. Oh, I don't care what Ephesians 1:11 says. God does not operate all things according to the counsel of his own will. Would love to hear that honesty, but you'll never hear it. Because sayings like that, however consistent with the free will belief, that is, God is not operating all things, it's too honest. It's too raw for most to utter. It offends the spiritual ear, whatever amount of spirit there is in such people. It offends them. That's good. It contradicts scripture, to be sure. So it took lots of theologians. Here we go. The fly in a jar. It took lots of theologians with lots of degrees, a long time, to come up with a ridiculous, unscriptural example of how God could be sovereign and every human being on the planet could be free all at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a magic trick worthy of Harry Houdini. The very concept is impossible, of course. We're going to ignore that for a second. The illustration, fly in a jar, is also impossible. Just want to tell you that ahead of time. Sorry, hope it's not spoiler there. Well, spoiler alert, yeah. This example, I'm going to give you fly in a jar. And its corollary spawns. The dog on a leash, horse in a bridle. All of it's impossible. Just thought you should know that ahead of time. But the theologians, the people who came up with this crap, the philosophers, the people who want both things, they felt much better having invented it. They invented this to satisfy their need to talk a good game of sovereignty, but to get a piece of the power for themselves. And it's a concept. And as you know, theologians dearly love concepts. And they love philosophies, not so keen on scripture. This is what they say. It's kind of like a fly in the jar, they say. A fly in the jar, I ask. Sure, they say a fly in the jar. See, we're the fly. God's control is the jar, the edge of the jar. We can't go outside God's control, that is, outside the edge of the jar. But inside the jar, we can go wherever we want. We're free from his control inside the jar. Outside the jar, we would be really free from his control. So he patrols, God does. He patrols the edge of the jar to make sure that that never happens. Make sure nobody gets to the edge. The edge of the jar represents, you see, according to our brilliant philosophy, the edge of the jar represents God's, his border patrol, let's call it that. His last shot, if you will, at controlling our uncontrollability before we would become truly uncontrollable, which, of course, could never happen. How long did it take you to come up with this illustration, I ask? Months. We put all our people on it. Then we took a vote. Harry's idea won. Harry? Oh, yeah, Dr. Harry Dilks, First Free Will Baptist Holy Trinity Church of Eternal Flames. He has more degrees than Nebuchadnezzar's oven. He also owns the pet store downtown as a side gig. He used to capture flies, in an old mayonnaise jar when he was a kid. Oh, I see. Well, yeah, that's very interesting. But please tell me, did you happen to hear yourself earlier when you said, quote, we can't go outside God's control? Yeah, I heard myself. Then did you hear yourself say we're free from his control? Yeah, I believe I did hear that. Good. I was just checking. Can I ask you a question? If you must. Okay, since control is exercising restriction, okay? Yeah. And freedom is exemption from restriction. Are you following me? Oh, yeah. Then can you please explain how God exercises restriction over those exempt from restriction? Well, I'm sorry to have to say this, but if you force me to think, I'm afraid I'm going to have to kill you. Okay, look, let me just change tack a little bit. Let's talk about your concept. Oh, great. Yes, go ahead. I love this concept. Okay, now, if the fly is free from God's control inside the jar, how could he be really free from it outside the jar? Follow me here. See, freedom is freedom. If he's free from God's control inside, what's the difference if he's outside? Either way, God doesn't control him. It seems to me like maybe you're putting the fly inside the jar for cosmetic purposes. Don't get upset. No, stop. No, don't get upset. Hang on. Maybe you're putting the fly inside of the jar for cosmetic purposes. To make it look like God controls everything. But your so-called border, the glass on the jar, straddles two realms of identical freedom, right? Because the fly inside the jar is completely free, inside the jar, and the fly outside the jar is completely free. So it looks to me like the glass is a cosmetic addition designed to trick people into thinking you believe God controls everything, when really you don't believe this at all. Because according to your concept, illustration if you like, God controls me in the same way I control a fly in the jar. That's the analogy, isn't it? Yes, sir. It's precisely the analogy. You've stated it well, young man. All right, great. So I can't control a fly in a jar. Not at all. Can I? This must mean God can't control me. Not at all. Does that sound scriptural to you? Does it agree with Ephesians 1:11 that God is operating all in accord with the counsel of his own will? Listen, kid. I never told you we've worked all the bugs out of this analogy. No humor intended there. I try not to be funny, you see, ever. Maybe I should have said that the fly has a certain amount of freedom inside the jar. I hope I'm not throwing you off there, kid, with the technical terminology there. Certain amount of. Most laymen get lost whenever Harry and me start using highly technical phrases, you know, like a certain amount of. I say, but if the fly has only a certain amount of freedom, then God only has a certain amount of control. To me, people who say God exercises only partial control over his creation have not even begun to fathom his power and might. They've not even begun to properly worship and revere him. They're still babes at believing scripture. You're trying to make me think again, kid, and you ought not do that. All right. Tell me this, according to your little illustration here. How far can I go before God takes over full control? I told you, to the edge of the jar. Okay, assuming there is an edge of the jar, where does the edge of the jar start? What do you mean? No, I mean, what in my life corresponds to the edge of the jar? If the edge of the jar is God's control, where does it begin? Am I free from his counsel? Am I free from his control only when I'm in my bathroom? My house? My car? Am I free until I cross the border of my state? Until I leave my country? The world? Does my freedom from God's control apply only to my decisions about what to eat for breakfast or what to wear? Or does it extend to moral decisions? In other words, where does my freedom end and God's control begin? Doesn't that seem like an important question?
Well, Harry's still working on that.
Oh, good. Well, how long do you think it'll take him? Oh, months, probably. Is God controlling Harry right now?
Well, we're not exactly sure. If Harry's in his jar mode today, then God is definitely not controlling him. But if Harry is outside the jar, then God...
Wait a minute. Hold on. Wait right there. I thought you told me no one can go outside the jar. Because the edge of the jar represents God's last shot. That's your quote, last shot at control.
Well, what I meant to say was that you can't look like you're going to make a run for the edge of the jar. See, if God sees that you're getting so far off course that you might make a run for the edge, then God intervenes and stops you.
Yeah, but for God to intervene, he has to reach inside the jar. Yes? And if he reaches inside the jar, he violates my freedom, which you say he can't do when I'm inside the jar, no more than I can control a fly inside of a jar. So really, God's control is even closer than the edge of the jar. Wouldn't you at least have to admit that? If God even occasionally has to reroute me before I reach the edge of the jar, he must have to enter my free space inside the jar. He must have to enter it. And if he enters it once near the edge, how do you know he doesn't enter it often elsewhere in the jar? In fact, what proof do you have that he doesn't enter it all the time everywhere in the jar? What proof do you have that there even is a jar?
Yes, well, kid, look, as I said, Harry is still working on this. And in a few months or so, I'm sure we'll have satisfactory answers that will more than quench your God-given...
Hey, let me ask you something. Have you guys ever read about the potter and the clay?
The who and the what?
The potter and the clay, Romans chapter 9. It's a beautiful, ready-made scriptural illustration of God's control over humanity. God controls human beings like a potter controls clay. That's pretty simple to understand. A lot simpler than your illustration. Hey, listen, don't take it personally. God makes us exactly the way he wants us. It's all him. A piece of clay is...
Follow me, please.
Again, I don't mean any insult here, but a piece of clay is nothing at all like a buzzing fly. And the clay isn't in any kind of a jar. It smacks back and forth in the hands of the potter.
Oh, yeah. The potter and the clay illustration, yes. Now that I think of it, we did bounce that one around a little bit.
Why didn't you adopt it?
Well, let's just say it didn't fit our needs.
What needs are those?
Do I have to be totally frank with you?
Yes, I wish you would, sir.
Very well.
Fly in the jar. The potter and the clay. That example didn't fit our need for at least a certain amount of control. It didn't fit our need for at least some little contribution we could call our own. It didn't fit our need to want to cooperate with God at least a little bit. Come on, kid, don't you feel that yourself? Actually, we just didn't like being compared to a piece of clay.
Okay, there, I said it. Are you happy? Are you satisfied?
Okay, and yet you still wanted to be able to say God was sovereign and to make it at least look like God was running things. So you, I mean Harry, put the fly in the jar.
Yeah, it answered all our needs. We could have a little bit of freedom and still make it look like God was in control.
Okay, and all along, hoping never to be pinned down with detailed logical questions or to be reminded that God already had an illustration, but one that not many people like because of how damaging it is to their pride.
Kit, you've been somewhat of a nuisance. Don't take it personally.
No, look, I appreciate your honesty, finally. Hey, between me and you, don't tell Harry I was talking to you. Hey, what would I look like? A writer or a broadcaster or something? And now, ladies and gentlemen, you just got the inside scoop, the invention of the fly in the jar. Where else are you going to get this but MZTV? Dog on a leash, horse in a bridle, fly in a jar. It's all the same human philosophy. This edge of the jar exists only in human philosophy. There is no edge where our freedom ends and God's control begins. God controls everything from our very willing and working. I got a verse for you on that, Philippians 2, 12 and 13. God is operating in you to will and to work for the sake of his delight. God controls everything from that to the hour that the sparrow dies. Matthew 10, 29. He's telling us this in Ephesians 1, 11 and many other places. Is it somehow too logical? The potter in the clay was the easiest picture he could make. Is it somehow too simple? How about Acts 17, 25? He himself gives to all life and breath and all. Is this somehow too universal? You see, what humans perceive to be their little bit of freedom is in reality those moments that they don't feel God. In Scripture, it is those times when humans relate to one another and God makes his arm invisible. But humans are so short-sighted that they assume that when God becomes invisible, he's left town. The edge of the jar is the edge of human sight. Where a man cannot see, he assumes God cannot see. Where he does not touch, he assumes God does not touch. And so he erects a wall or an edge of a glass at this spot, at the border of his, quote, freedom, unquote. But in reality, this is the border of his ignorance. This is not where God's sovereignty ends. It's where man's ignorance begins. And on this man-made wall or pane of glass, there ought to be a plaque. And the plaque ought to read this. Here marks the spot where we lose track of God. Instead of a humiliating plaque, however, philosophers and theologians have erected a proud philosophy. It's a pity, too. I would rather that spot be overgrown with weeds. Think about it, dude. Can you control me inside a jar?
Why, no, Mr. Fly. I can't control you inside a jar at all.
Very good, Einstein. So according to this ridiculous illustration, God can't control you.
Golly, Mr. Fly, you're right. But you've thoroughly exposed our God is in control facade. What should we do now?
Try reading the Bible, bucko. Just leave me out of it. I got enough problems fighting my plague stereotype.